from the Star Rentals Sports Desk. Your 93.3 KJRFM Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 3 o'clock, brought to you by VenueKings.com. The American League, a 3-2 comeback win last night in the All-Star Game. Their ninth straight win in the series, 20 of their last 23. Giancarlo Stanton, the MVP, after hitting a two-run shot for the American League. Storm drop one today in Chicago, 78-74 to fall to three games back of the Sky for the number one overall seed with 10 to play. Brianna Stewart led Seattle with 24. The final Bird-Taurasi regular season matchup is coming up next, Friday night, 7 o'clock from Phoenix. Hornets forward Miles Bridges has been formally charged with felony, domestic violence, and child abuse stemming from an alleged assault last month in Los Angeles. Jimmy Garoppolo is expected to be fully cleared in the next 3 weeks, and the 49ers have given Garoppolo's agent permission to seek a trade. We will talk to Mike Florio about that in less than 10 minutes. Lumen Fields announced upgrades to their stadium for their 20th anniversary, including two new video boards atop the north stands that will be twice the size of the old ones. Let's get to our Wednesday extravaganza.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers. Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
This is Softy and Dick.
Thank you, Dixon and Aubrey. Yes, indeed, it is brutal radio. It is horrible, like the Open says. It's normally horrible with Softy and myself. Today, it's horrible with Hugh and myself. Hi, Hugh. How are you?
Yeah, I think we can take it to an extra depth.
I can take it to a new level of horrible.
We frequently do. We usually do.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I feel bad for our listeners. I mean, Dave right now, could you imagine? I'm Softy. You know, the all-time gold standard for energy. Just imagine how he'd be bubbling about Julio in the home run and just kind of the state of the Mariners right now. So I feel bad. I don't know that anybody can equal Softy in that area. I certainly can't. But at any rate, we'll try and have a good time in the next few hours. Yeah. A lot to be excited about. You know,
a lot to be excited about. It was fun last night. Now, it was kind of scattered. The whole All-Star experience for me was much different than Monday. I mean, Monday, I was locked in. I didn't have any plans. I got home. I watched the whole dang thing because I worked the morning show. But yesterday, I was back on my regular schedule. Didn't get out of here until like the fifth inning. And then had to go right to a swim meet, which, by the way, I ended up in a Speedo, Hugh. And I think you have done this before, have you not? Have you not done
not in a Speedo. No, I was in a pair of...
Have you not done the parent relay before?
Jams.
Oh, you? Yeah, the jammers. The jammers. I'm talking about the tight jammers that go, you know, almost down your
knees.
No,
not the tight jammers. Like the stuff you could actually wear at a Hawaii beach.
You swam in trunks in a relay?
Yeah. Yes, it wasn't a relay. It was just... I mean, I got talked in. My kids were on a swim team. They said, hey... would you be willing to, you know, be part of this dad's thing? And, you know, I swam when I was a kid. I'm like, well, I probably won't drown if I get, you know, it's just 25 yards from point A to point B, right?
Yeah.
Well, now I thought it was just like our club, but it turned out it was like all comers meet, like six clubs. And so you got, as you might imagine, there's all these dads. As it turns out, I start asking all these guys, every one of them.
It's like swam in college.
Swam in college, and the one that didn't, he was on water polo in college, right? So, which sounds like a swimming endeavor to me. So, I was a decided underdog, and I was the only one wearing free-flowing jams. So,
the free-flowing. Yeah, I would never do the 1980s Speedos again. I mean, I left that in the 1980s. So, you'll be good.
We can't unsee that. Yeah. Thank you for that gift. For the patrons.
But yeah. I was, you know, I did tape the All-Star game, and I was able to kind of look back at some of the great points of it. And, you know, it's funny because our human nature is to see an event like that and complain about it, right? The human nature is to let's find all the things we didn't like about the broadcast and complain about it. And I got to be honest with you, from the uniforms at the very beginning when I turned it on and I saw Clayton Kershaw in those whites with the gold trim and the gold Dodgers and the hat, and I was like, all the way through to miking up the pitchers and Liam Hendricks yelling at Julio Rodriguez not to throw the ball in the crowd. I was like, you know what? That was pretty damn good from beginning to end last night.
Well, I don't agree with you on the uniforms at all. I think that they would be good-looking uniforms if they, you know, I mean, the kind of the National League had a little bit of a Saints color scheme with them.
Yeah.
So
I wasn't as big a fan as the the darks as I was of the whites.
The lights with the white and the gold.
I like.
I don't know. I just maybe I'm old school. I would just vastly prefer that each player wear their own uniform. That's kind of my vision of an All Star game.
Like, and that's, that, didn't you it? Can it didn't do say that. American and National on it. It did have their jerseys. You know, it was their jerseys,
not their color schemes.
Colors. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, look, did I lose any sleep over it last night? No, but I did find myself on a few occasions as I watched, just not liking that at all. I'd rather have that, you know, because the baseball, that's the one sport of all the All Star games that is most conducive to actually wearing your entire uniform. Of course, the Pro Bowl has done your own helmet, what have you. It's hard in basketball, obviously, so they don't do that. But baseball has been the one that says, hey, okay, if you're a National League team, wear your road grays or your road light blues or whatever the heck it is. And if you're the home team, wear your home whites, and everybody gets to see, you know, that rainbow of colors that you can see in the baseball All-Star game is one aspect that I've always liked. I've always thought that certainly baseball has the potential to be the best All-Star game if the guys are playing hard. You know, I define playing hard. Does that mean Pete Rose is breaking collarbones? You know, right. We could get into a debate, but certainly just the format of the game, I think baseball has a leg up on the other sports in terms of its ability to be the best All-Star game.
I'm wondering if we're ever going to get to the point, because it seems like we're moving in the direction of interactive players being interactive as they're playing the game. Now, obviously, you're not in a competitive game, you're not going to have, you know, in a playoff game, you're not going to have John Smoltz telling Alex Manoa which pitch to throw. I get that. That's a part of an exhibition situation. But are we going to get to the point that in a World Series game, every one of these players are mic'd up and you're going to be able to hear everything? The conversation between the guy on first and the first baseman, the conversation between the first base coach and the runner on first. Are we going to get more interactive? We're already starting to get like interviews with managers in the dugout. We're getting, you know, head coaches, the NBA teams being interviewed during the timeout or coming out of the timeout. I mean, is that even a good thing for sports that we have that type of interaction during a contest?
I think it's a great thing. I think it really enhances the viewing experience. I love it in golf when I hear the caddy and the player exchanging. You know, they got the parabolic mic and the guys ostensibly aren't really thinking about the fact that they're being listened to. I think it really augments the sports viewing experience. So I would be, if I was a executive producer of all this stuff, I'd be pushing the envelope on that. And then you'd say, okay, well, you can tape it. You got to edit it. You got to pull out the four letter words or beep them. And you know, there's some certain things, some strategy restraints. We know when we hear Steve Kerr, you know, it just sounds like a pep talk in those meetings, and they're not going to play the strategic part of it. But I think that hearing him, at least something is better than nothing. And I think the more audio we can get from all sports, the better.
Yeah, and I think we see it, you know, in the NFL, though, right now it's delayed. And I'd love to get Florio's take on that when we have him in just a second, because, like, we get this NFL Network, like, replay a couple days later with it's all packaged down and edited down, and we're hearing all these cool things that these guys are saying on the sidelines. We just don't hear them on the broadcast on Sunday. And speaking of Mike Florio, let's go to him right now.
It's time for our weekly conversation with Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Tired of buying and repping the same old Seattle sports gear everyone else has? For the best Storm, Seahawks, Mariners, Kraken, Rainiers, Sounders, and not to mention the largest Sonics collection in the world, check out SimplySeattle.com. Now with Mike Florio, here's Softy and Dick.
Simply Seattle has just dropped a new Christmas in July special. That's right. It's 80 degrees out. It doesn't matter. It's Christmas. For all you Sonic fans out there, Seattle Supersonics pajama sets. Shop them now at SimplySeattle.com. Make sure to use the code KJRSUMMER to get 20% off your entire purchase. Michael Florio, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We were just kind of discussing the All-Star game and kind of the interactive nature of it. I don't know if you paid any attention to it last night, but they had guys mic'd up. They had, we just heard a lot more interaction than we normally do in a baseball game. And I was thinking about football and how, you know, we get that NFL Network show in the middle of the week and it's all this cool stuff that we didn't get to hear on Sunday. I'm wondering if you think we're going to move in that direction when we're going to get many more players mic'd up on a Sunday and get to hear them right after they say something on the sideline or on the field.
There was a day that I was a huge baseball fan. Yesterday was not one of those days, but I am aware of some of the back and forth that made it through the broadcast. The USFL did that throughout its 10-week regular season and 2-week postseason. Not that a whole lot of people watched it. The NFL has been aware of the possibility. Obviously, the technology exists. It has been discussed from time to time as a value enhancer for people who actually go to the games in the stadium. The same way that you can tune in and hear the discussions during a NASCAR race. That has been discussed. There is obvious sensitivity. Guys like Bill Belichick don't want anyone in the position to hear what's being said between the coaching staff and the quarterback. But it is something that the league has kicked around from time to time. I just think that that concept took a back seat dramatically 4 years ago in May when the U.S. Supreme Court opened the floodgates for legalized gambling, because I think that became the NFL's focal point for revenue growth, for expansion of interest, for everything that would increase the platform of the league and its relevance to the game or to the fans. And I now that you mention it, it's probably been just about that long since I've heard anyone talk about that possibility. They're all in with squeezing the most they can out of legalized gambling.
Well, I hope that they do add more audio. Mike, when there's a nexus of legal matters colliding with the NFL, none better. You're the best. You have a law degree. The Texans settle their claims related to the Watson allegations. What's your just kind of give us a quick synopsis of that and your take on that?
Well, they settled the one claim that was filed against them and 29 others that could have been filed. That means 30 total cases were out there. And with 24 that had been filed against Watson, 20 of them have now settled. My math isn't very good, but it's good enough to tell me there are six others floating around out there that could be filed against Watson. And it's possible that Watson has quietly settled those. The best settlement is the one that happens before a lawsuit is filed, then no one even knows there was a claim. So my first thought was there's six more out there that could be brought against Watson. And it also helps Watson in that if he settles the four remaining cases against him, if there are no other lawsuits filed against him, once the process with the NFL is over, he doesn't have to worry about getting dragged into up to 30 lawsuits against the Texans and having to testify there and have this distraction, this embarrassment continue to hover over him. And it would have been awkward, to say the least, for the Texans and Watson. There was a deadline coming up this week, next week, where the Texans would have had to respond to the first lawsuit filed directly against them. And what they would have probably done is joined Watson as what's called a third-party defendant. And the headline would have been, Texans sue their former starting quarterback. So the settlement avoided that complication as well. So all in all, it was good for Watson, but he still has enough problems that are going to keep him occupied until we know what the league is going to do about it and what happens with the remaining lawsuits.
You were reporting earlier today about the potential of an 8-game suspension. Is the goal for Judge Robinson to kind of get the right length so that both sides are satisfied and we don't get an appeal?
Well, no judge wants to be reversed on appeal. And the only way that she knows she won't be reversed on appeal is if she issues no discipline whatsoever, because the procedure that the league and the union have hammered out back in 2020 seals off any appeal if there's no punishment of any kind, no fine, no suspension, no anything. Now, if there's a short suspension, then the question becomes, what will the league do? What will the fans say? What will the media say if Judge Robinson only suspends him 4, 6, or 8 games? Is there a sweet spot? There was a report from the Associated Press a couple of weeks back that if it's a 6-to-8-game suspension, maybe the league won't appeal it. I still think the league has to be very cognizant of how people react, because it was perception/reality that they were too lenient with Ray Rice 8 years ago that nearly brought the entire operation down. The commissioner spent, my guess is, a week and a half worrying that he was going to have to resign or be fired that next day. Mm. That's how bad it was for that sliver of time in September of 2014. So that's where they have to be very cognizant of how people are going to react to Judge Robinson's decision. And they have to decide, do we appeal it back to the commissioner? And really, at the end of the day, the way I read the personal conduct policy, the commissioner can't change any of the facts, can't bring any new evidence. He's bound by the findings of fact made by Judge Robinson. But if she suspends four games and he wants to go 17, I don't see anything in the personal conduct policy that prevents him from banging his gavel and saying it's a 17-game full-season suspension.
Mike Florio with us. Mike, the Niners have given Jimmy Garoppolo the okay to seek a trade. Here's a guy that has won close to 70% of his games under Kyle Shanahan, and I think all other quarterbacks combined under Shanahan are barely over 20%. What's your personal reaction to that, and how do you see this playing out? What's the update in that with the Garoppolo situation?
Well, I thought it was interesting because the report from Adam Schefter that the 49ers have given Garoppolo permission to seek a trade was followed by an item from Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area saying they've been trying to trade this guy for weeks. It isn't really news. And this is one of those interesting to some inside baseball realities, and it goes back to the Adam Schefter profile or whatever that thing was last week in the Washington Post as to how the sausage gets made. Look, he's doing Don Yee a favor here. He's helping Don Yee pull the cord on the lawnmower to try to get something happening because nothing is happening. That's what it is. And people were interested in that story last week. So if you're interested in that story, you need to be interested in how it actually works, how this quid pro quo, this trading favors, how this game actually plays out. And it plays out with Schefter blasting out a tweet to his 9.6 million Twitter followers that Jimmy Garoppolo has permission to seek a trade when they've been trying to trade the guy. They can't find any takers. And this is just basically the paddles on the dead body trying to spark it back to life.
Well, I think that's a hell of an analogy right there.
Sorry, I know. Sorry. Clear,
I just,
by the way.
Yeah. I just think the Seahawks are in an interesting situation because they're one of the few teams that have a pretty ready-made football team except for one position. Like, the other teams either have their quarterback or they're just a bleep show and a Jimmy Garoppolo wouldn't help them anyway. So I honestly kind of see the Seahawks in this kind of convenient window where Jimmy Garoppolo could potentially turn a 7-10 team into a 10-7 team. Do you think the Seahawks feel that way?
Well, it depends. It depends. And here's one of the things that just flashed through my brain. I thought back to 2009 when Brett Favre showed up in Minnesota, basically after training camp had started. And there was some resistance within the organization. They were getting behind Tavares Jackson. The players really liked him. And Favre comes in, gets up to speed, and off they go. I don't know that Jimmy Garoppolo is a guy who shows up early in training camp and makes a dramatic difference. I don't think he's so good that his mere arrival is going to dramatically change a team's fortunes. Now, maybe he makes a really bad team like the Texans into a 500 team. But I continue to believe, and we've talked about this in the past, I think Pete Carroll would love nothing more than to win football games with Russell Wilson's backup.
Yeah.
And get to the playoffs with Russell Wilson's backup and prove to Russell Wilson that the success that he enjoyed for a decade in Seattle had a lot to do with everything that was around him, defense, coaching, other personnel, and it wasn't just him. And I don't think that Jimmy Garoppolo falling out of the sky is enough for Pete Carroll, to a guy who has a ceiling, and I just don't think it fits with what the Seahawks are currently trying to do. And I don't think they're so hell-bent. Like, it's not Joe Montana coming free from the 49ers. If this really sticks it to the 49ers, I don't sense that vibe that the Seahawks view this as some way to really, really show the 49ers how they screwed up. So I'm sticking with my thoughts that they're going with Geno Smith or Drew Lock.
Mike, I was just on an hour Zoom with the 33rd team, that think tank of current and former NFL guys, I guess is what you could say. And the bulk of the conversation for an hour was about Lamar Jackson and the contract and just kind of what to expect and schematically how teams are getting ahead of their run scheme a little bit, in a similar way that the read zone has diminished in its impact. What's your take on what's going to happen with Lamar Jackson? And if you were at a craps table and you're betting on him, and his trajectory over the next few years? Where do you stand with Lamar Jackson?
Well, the problem is he plays with such a physical style. He reminds me of Cam Newton in that he seems indestructible, but every hit he takes adds up. And there will be a point where either he has a serious injury or he's just no longer the guy that he used to be. For Cam Newton, he had multiple serious injuries. He recovered from them, air quotes recovered, but then never got back to being the guy that he was before the shoulder, before the foot. And that's the risk with Lamar Jackson. And that's where this five-year fully guaranteed contract that the Browns gave to Deshaun Watson becomes a major factor, both for Lamar Jackson and for Kyler Murray and for future quarterbacks. One five-year fully guaranteed contract can be regarded as an aberration. The challenge will be for one of these guys, Murray or Jackson, if they can get a five-year fully guaranteed deal, then maybe it sticks for other quarterbacks who are coming behind them. And an interesting angle to keep in mind is this. And I think Bisciotti can pull it off, but I'm not sure Michael Bidwell can do it. And there are other teams coming up who are going to have quarterback contracts like Mike Brown in Cincinnati. Can the teams take what basically would be on a $230 million fully guaranteed contract? It's $170 million you eventually have to put in escrow. You got to come up with that cash and you got to put it in a separate account to comply with the NFL's outdated funding rule. That to me is a huge factor for Jackson, for Murray, and for other quarterbacks going forward. And especially Jackson because, you know, people say, hey, we should have guaranteed contracts for all players. Well, that's fine. But if you give somebody a five-year, $230 million fully guaranteed contract, and after 3 years of those five, he just can't get it done anymore. He just can't play. He can't even stay on the field. That's just less money there for the guys who are actually playing.
Right.
You're taking money away from the guys who are getting it done if you've got a five-year fully guaranteed deal, and in years 4 and 5, the guy can't earn his money. You're hurting the guys who actually are out there playing. So that's a very real counter to the idea that all contracts should be fully guaranteed. But that's the frontier that the Browns have crossed into, and I think that's one of the many fascinating wrinkles for Lamar Jackson and for Kyler Murray. Are they going to get 5 years fully guaranteed as well?
Finally, Mike, is Dan Snyder going to spend the rest of his life on his yacht just so he can't be served a subpoena by Congress?
Well, I've seen pictures of the yacht, and I read an article that we posted today about the yacht and the IMAX theater that's inside the yacht and the 200-inch TV screen that's up on the deck and the swimming pools, and it's a football field long. It's got a helicopter pad on it. I would just stay there until January. And, you know, I started off referring to it as a joke, like these super yachts aren't just trophies. They're a way to avoid process and not get sued and not get subpoenaed. But you know what? You just float around in international waters until the end of the year, and you never testify. And let's face it, that's the only good outcome for him. Testifying would be a debacle for Daniel Snyder. He's going to lie to Congress and then end up in a potential perjury prosecution, or he's going to tell the truth and see his franchise possibly get forcibly removed from him. Just don't go home. Because who's saying anything about it? The NFL is afraid of him. They're afraid to pick a fight with the guy because they fear that he will go scorched earth. And this is one of the rare benefits of being someone that most people don't like. When you do something that is objectively not likable, nobody cares. They already don't like you. Like, it's not like there's going to be some dramatic change in public opinion on Daniel Snyder. People are just going to shrug. Yeah, well, yeah, he's just acting on brand. Like, okay, fine. We've already made up our mind. So that to me is one of the most unexpectedly fascinating stories of the past 20 years since I've been covering the NFL. And the day that I'm watching is August 13. That's when his team opens the preseason at home against Carolina. And he was there last year, even though he's on Goodell's double secret probation. If he's not there this year, if that yacht's still floating around over in the Mediterranean, that I really am going to believe that he's just going to stay away until the Congress changes and they don't continue to pursue him for testimony.
Unbelievable. You're the best, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. See ya.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah,
Mike Florio. Just fantastic as always, Hugh. He's fantastic as always.
But he's really bright, very colorful. He's opinionated, very eloquent, very articulate. I mean, he's always a guy that I stop and listen because he's got a great take, even if I don't agree, and I usually do agree. But on the occasions I don't agree, I always respect you know, the platform and his process and what have you. You guys got a good one getting him every week.
You hear that, Jackson? There's one segment that Hugh stops and listens to. Hey, the rest is crap, but Hugh listens to one segment. Oh, that's exactly. That's exactly right. Well, it's interesting what he said about Jimmy Garoppolo. I want to get Hugh's take on that coming up next, 93.3 KJRFM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
Our thanks to Mike Florio for joining us. Always opinionated, always fantastic. The news of the day in the NFL is, and Mike was questioning whether it was really today's news. It just came out today that Jimmy Garoppolo, his agent, has been given permission to seek a trade from the San Francisco 49ers. And Hugh, I just think the Seahawks are in an interesting position this year where they're one of the very few teams in the NFL. You're either we know that you're the have or the have not. You either have a quarterback, you don't have the quarterback. So that separates the top 12 to 14 teams from the other 18 teams. But of the other 18 teams, there are very few teams that actually have playoff ready-made rosters, but just don't have the quarterback. And the Seahawks are, unless we find out that Drew Lock is the answer, the Seahawks are one of those very few teams, which just, so it intrigues me. The Garoppolo thing intrigues me. I'm not pounding the table saying the Seahawks need to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. Not at all. But I do think Jimmy Garoppolo is a much better option than Baker Mayfield was. And I do think that the Seahawks would be a legitimate playoff contender with Jimmy G. Do you agree with those premises?
Yeah, I do. I think I agree with what you said. I think that we tend to say, hey, this haves and haves nots, and you want to obviously be angling for a quarterback that you can win a championship with. I think in reality, shades of gray, and I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a good quarterback. And I think that you can win a Super Bowl with them. I mean, if it wasn't for a 3rd and 15, I wouldn't call it fluky because well executed, but it was a very unique scheme that the Chiefs got Tyreek Hill open halfway through the fourth quarter on a 3rd and long. Otherwise, they're punting, and there's a very good chance that San Francisco, I mean, if you have the ESPN win probability chart, San Francisco, if they stop that play, are probably north of 75%, pushing 80% in terms of win probability just off that play.
Yeah. And last year,
you go back to the Rams, that fluky dropped interception.
Jaquiski Tart.
Yeah, I think the 49ers, had he intercepted that midway through the fourth quarter, I think there was about 9 minutes, San Francisco probably had close to a 70% win probability. Mm-hmm. So I do think you can win a Super Bowl with him. Is it because of him? Are you just going to ride him? Do you think of him in a traditional sense as, okay, like Aaron Rodgers winning a Super Bowl or Drew Brees? No, but, Brad Johnson has won a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer has won a Super Bowl. There's been, there's been varying stages of proficiency, both in terms of productivity, which can be measured by yards and touchdown passes, and in terms of efficiency, which can be measured by absence of interceptions and completion percentage as a general rule. There's take 50 whatever Super Bowl winners, they're going to hit that chart differently. And so I think Garoppolo is good enough to win a Super Bowl. I mean, he's 31-14 as a starting quarterback for the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan. That's a 689 win percentage.
Yep.
And Kyle Shanahan, the vaunted Kyle Shanahan with all other quarterbacks not named Jimmy Garoppolo are 8-27. I think he's a really good quarterback. The question is, do you get bogged down? There's a saying, good is the enemy of great. And it's a great, it's a line I've used in coaching, young people in high school. Good can lure you into thinking it's okay. Like you think you're on a decent path, right?
Right, right.
But it can be an impediment to great. And I don't have to walk people through. You can just kind of think for a moment as how that could be. Well, Jimmy Garoppolo, if you believe in that tenet, Jimmy Garoppolo could be the enemy of great.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be pretty damn good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you don't, but if you don't believe that he can be, you know, a throw a team on the back type of Super Bowl winner, again, contrasting that to a Trent Dilfer type of winner. If you don't think he can be a throw a team on the back type of winner, it could be an impediment to progress.
I want to take you back to May 26th. We were at the Sports Star Banquet and we were sitting with KJ. There you go. We were sitting with KJ Wright at the Sports Star Banquet. And I didn't ask him about Jimmy Garoppolo. I simply asked him about the Seahawks, and he brought up Jimmy Garoppolo.
What is this football team going to be this year?
The Seahawks?
Yeah.
I think the Seahawks can be – it depends on who's the 49ers quarterback. If it's Jimmy G or Trey Lance, the Seahawks are going to have a good year. It's not going to be this 5-6 wins mess. I believe they can have a really good year. And so I'm looking at second or third for the Seahawks.
So you're saying if Trey Lance is the quarterback, the Seahawks –
they'll do better than the Niners.
They'll do better than the Niners.
Mm-hmm. So you think Jimmy is a better answer for the Niners right now than Trey Lance?
I love Jimmy G.
Okay, it's got you.
So there's a guy that, you know, was on a lot of Seahawk football teams that beat Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, Garoppolo has as great a record as you indicated with the 49ers, and you're totally accurate, almost 70%. He's got a terrible record against the Seahawks. But well, Jimmy G is loved by KJ Wright.
Yeah. Well, KJ, if he were to defend it, you know, I'm sure of a lot of his reasons he would point to subjectivity. There's a few arguments that you can win just by objective data. You can just put out the numbers and then shut your mouth because you're already, you know, you're one square away from the king in checkmate. And that number where Jimmy G is 68.9% win percentage. All other 49er quarterbacks under Kyle Shanahan, 22.9. I mean, we're talking 69 to 23%, right? I mean, I would like to know any quarterback in any system that has ever had that big of a drop. Mm-hmm. And don't say the quarterbacks where I'm the number two guy. but you know, that's a pretty dramatic drop off. And, I don't think Tom Brady enjoys that type, has that type of lead over his backups. I don't think that Aaron Rodgers does, or, you know, who are the modern Hall of Famers? I don't think anybody has that big of a drop off.
Well, how about his comment on Trey Lance? Obviously, I mean, you haven't seen a lot of NFL regular season data yet on Trey Lance, but you did break him down pretty thoroughly, as you always do for the Mahler Millen mock draft, and you knew he was going to be one of the guys drafted. So, I mean, is he a guy that this 49ers should be resting their future on?
Well, I think it's a gamble. Certainly has the physical goods. Big guy, moves well. Man among boys, watched a lot of his North Dakota State tape, a lot. And, you know, when they got in trouble, they could just run quarterback power on third and eight.
Like
and
Cam
he
could Newton, get in behind. Right?
Yeah, like Cam Newton, and quarterback power is distinguished from, let's say, even quarterback draws or read zones, because that's real. Like if you as a coach are willing to call quarterback power, and you're running in between the B gaps, meaning right in the middle of the field where all the angles and are the most brutal in terms of the potential hits. You believe in the stature of your quarterback. You believe he has the strength to give the hits, to move the pile, that he's going to be durable. He's going to take those hits. And a big part of what they did was North Dakota State's belief in him just being a man among boys. But that was in essence, a conference like the Big Sky. You know, that wasn't even Middle American Conference.
Right.
If we're talking about Midwest football, which would be the second best conference in the region, that's no better than the third best conference. I think it was Missouri Valley or whatever it is. It's on the level of Idaho, Montana,
right?
Big Sky football. That they compete against each other for FCS. So and then the biggest red flag coming out is as you looked at everything and you evaluated and really got under the microscope, accuracy was the biggest problem for him. Well, that's There's no cloaking or you know, putting a veil over that, and so that's going to be his biggest concern. He hasn't lit it up yet. Doesn't mean he won't. Mm-hmm. In this regard, you know, Kyle Shanahan has seen him, and maybe it's like what the Packers saw in Aaron Rodgers when they were willing to let Favre go. Maybe it's like what the Chiefs saw in Patrick Mahomes, and they're willing to let Alex Smith, who had really been quite a winner for them, let him go to the Redskins. So Kyle Shanahan, he's the one seeing in practice, and he's got to make a determination as to whether if he's going to let Garoppolo go, he's really got to be liking what he sees in practice.
I want to discuss something that Mike said about Pete Carroll and his pride on who he picks as quarterback in 2022. I thought it was very interesting. We'll find the cut and replay it for you, and we'll talk about it next on 93.3 KJRFM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
I think Pete Carroll would love nothing more than to win football games with Russell Wilson's backup.
Yeah.
And get to the playoffs with Russell Wilson's backup and prove to Russell Wilson that the success that he enjoyed for a decade in Seattle had a lot to do with everything that was around him, defense, coaching, other personnel, and it wasn't just him.
It's Mike Florio earlier this hour, and Hugh, I don't think when he says Russell Wilson's backup, I don't think he means specifically Geno Smith. I think he means Geno Smith or the guy they traded Russell Wilson for. I don't think he's just specifically talking about who Russell Wilson's backup was. But do you think that pride has something to do with this and that the Seahawks might turn their nose up at a potential trade for a Jimmy Garoppolo because of pride, and that Pete Carroll says, no, I want to do it this way with our guys?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that pride and ego is a big part of most people, most high achievers, and sometimes it manifests itself in counterproductive ways. You know, I don't see overt signs usually of that with Carroll, because he's been a pretty good coach, but there are signs, and sure, I think he's human like other people, and there are times, you know, his insistence on the running game, what have you, personnel. Right now, I think that they probably feel like they've put a lot of chips on the table for Drew Locke. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, just to put things in perspective, we talked about his 68.9 win percentage. To put that into perspective, Russell Wilson has a 66.1 win percentage. Russell Wilson would have to win his next 14 games in consecutive. He'd have to start with the Broncos 14-0 before his win percentage as an NFL quarterback would surpass Jimmy Garoppolo's win percentage with the 49ers. And so so it's been pretty impressive what Garoppolo has done down there. Now, when you watch tape, there's some limitations. The first thing that jumps out at me is, why on earth is this man not throwing outside the numbers? So much of his completions, his attempts, where his eyes are focused, he wants to win over the middle of the field, which is actually you know, I think most quarterbacks would say it's tougher to read the middle of the field. The reads are easier outside the numbers. Now, you have to have the arm. You got to drive the ball. I think he has the arm. He's got a quick release for sure. In terms of his overall velocity, I think it's more than sufficient to throw those deep comebacks. And so it's peculiar to me why his hit chart is so directed towards the middle of the field. Again, between the numbers, in the NFL game, the bottom of the numbers are at 12 yards from the sideline, and the top of the numbers are 14. So that area, 12 yards inward from each sideline, is an area that is just underutilized by Garoppolo.
Interesting response to the poll I just sent out at Dick Fain on Twitter. Should the Seahawks pursue a deal for Garoppolo? And then I put low round draft pick and not much money commitment. I'm just more, and that's basically what it would be. We're almost at 100 votes already in 8 minutes. It started with yes being the leader at about 53 to 55%. Now it has shifted to no. So it's 45 yes, 55 no right now. So you can go on and vote. I'd also like to hear your votes on the text line at 49451. What do you think about the Jimmy Garoppolo possibility here in Seattle? We'll play some of those texts at 445. Hugh, before we get to Petros at the top of the hour, I want to I want to ask you about the Oregon Duck football player that passed away this last week or so, because I know that he is very close to one of your sons, and just wanted to get your kind of perspective on what type of person Spencer Webb was who passed away.
Yeah, met him immediately when my son enrolled, and he would come up to the dorm, and there was a time Kale and I were going out to get some supplies for his apartment, and he came up and was just kind of, you know, asked my wife, hey, do you need help making Kale's bed? And then they just kind of sat in the living room and chatted, and he comes from a tough background. You know, was raised by, was not raised by his parents, you know, prostitution, prison, a lot of really unfortunate things in his life. But he had really straightened things around, and I think he was going to be drafted for sure. I mean, big guy, 6'6", great frame, athletic.
Tight end, right?
Yeah, tight end, yeah. And had really been quite a participant. I mean, he scored a very pivotal touchdown in that opener against Auburn a couple of years ago, if you remember when Oregon played at Auburn. I mean, so he's been on the radar. This is really – And his contributions have been ramping up, played a lot in that Ohio State game, and he was going to be, you know, full-fledged number one tight end for this program. And so, you know, after the Oregon community dries their tears about the tragedy, they're going to then say, whoa, this impacts our football team. So, but yeah, Kale, my son, I think the last 3 years, 3 months rather, he was at Oregon. He'd pick up Spencer every day to and from, and they did a lot of double dating his girlfriend, the respective girlfriend. So he got to know him real well. And both my wife and my son just think the world of him from what I know of him. Just a guy, great story of having overcome a lot of trauma. And it was worth all of that for Mario Cristobal because of the talent and the underlying really good person that he was. And so just what an incredible tragedy that he hits his head in a, you know, just a water, you know, recreation accident. You know, the girlfriend was there, kids were there. It had to be a really horrific scene for the eyewitnesses. But the Oregon community is hurting. I want to extend a little nod of the cap to University of Washington. They had a very classy tweet extending. You know, there's some things that, you know, transcend the rivalry, and I think all decent Huskies would be really kind of feeling for the Oregon football community, as would all decent Ducks be hurting for the Husky community had any Washington player, whether regardless of how vital he was to the team's fortune. I think any player, any young person, 22-year-old to lose their life. It was a nice gesture of sportsmanship by Washington to reach out and fair and appropriate. So glad Washington did that.
It absolutely was. And it was very appreciated on Twitter by Oregon fans. And you don't normally see Oregon fans speaking nicely about Washington football Twitter. But Washington did say our deepest condolences to Spencer Webb's family, friends, teammates in the entire Oregon community. Not something that Washington necessarily had to do, but really cool that they did that. All right, Petros Papadakis is going to join us right around the corner. Testimonials at 4:45. Jump on in, 494-51. What do you think about Jimmy Garoppolo and the Seattle Seahawks? And do you think, like you, that pride might keep the Seahawks from getting somebody like Jimmy G, because Pete Carroll just wants to puff up his chest and say, I'm going to win, damn it, with the guy I traded Russell Wilson for? All that coming up next in the 4 o'clock hour, 93.3 KJRFM.